And now it's time for the Northern Story Time. Hi, I'm Marion Flowers. Today I'll be reading from the book The People Could Fly, American Black Folk Tales, as told by Virginia Hamilton. How Nehemiah Got Free. In slavery time, they were smart slaves, and they did most what they wanted to by using just their wits. Hanging around the big house, they kept the slave owners laughing. They had to bow and scrape some, but they often was able to draw the least hard path. Nehemiah was the one who believed that if he must be a slave, he'd best be a smart one. No one who called himself Master of Nehemiah had ever been able to make him work hard for nothing. Nehemiah would always have a funny lie to tell, or he made some laughing remark whenever the so-called master had a question or a scolding. Nehemiah was always being moved from one plantation to another, for as soon as the slave owner realized Nehemiah was outwitting him, he sold Nehemiah as quick as he could to some other slaveholder. One day, the man known as the most cruel slave owner in that part of the state heard about Nehemiah. "Oh, I bet I can make that slave do what I tell him to," the slave owner said. And he went to Nehemiah's owner and buys him for him. Nehemiah's new owner was Mr. Wharton. And he told him to Nehemiah, "I bought you. Now tomorrow, you're going to work for me over there at my plantation, and you are going to pick 400 pounds of cotton a day." "Well, master," Nehemiah said, "that's all right, far as it goes. But if I make you laugh, won't you let me off for tomorrow?" "Well," said Wharton, who had never been known to laugh, "if you make me laugh, I won't only let you off for tomorrow, but I'll give you your freedom right then and there." "Well, I declare, master, you sure are a good-looking man," says Nehemiah. "I'm sorry I can't say the same about you, Nehemiah," answered Wharton. "Oh, yes, master, you could," Nehemiah said, laughing. "You could if you told as big a lie as I just did." Wharton threw back his head and laughed. It was a long, loud bellow. He had laughed before he thought. The truth is true, and facts is facts. And Nehemiah got his freedom. The People Could Fly. They say the people could fly. Say that long ago in Africa, some of the people knew magic, and they would walk up on the air like climbing up on a gate. And they flew like blackbirds over the field, black, shiny wings flapping against the blue up there. Then many of the people were captured for slavery. The ones that could fly shared their wings. They couldn't take their wings across the water on the slave ship. Too tired, don't you know? The folks were full of misery then, got sick with the up and down of the sea. So they forgot about flying when they could no longer breathe the sweet scent of Africa. So the people who could fly kept the power, although they shared their wings. They kept their secret magic in the land of slavery. They looked the same as the other people from Africa who had been coming over, who had dark skin. So you couldn't tell any more one who could fly from one who couldn't. One such who could was an old man, Colin Cody. And standing tall, yet afraid, was a young woman who once had wings. Call her Sarah. Now Sarah carried a bird tied to her back. She trembled to be so hard worked and scorned. The slaves labored in the fields from sun up to sundown. The owners of the slaves calling himself their master. So he was a hard lump of clay, a hard, glinty pole, a hard rock pile wouldn't be moved. His overseer on horseback pointed out the slaves who were slowing down. so the one called Driver cracked his ship over the forelands to make him move faster. That ship was a slice-open cut of pain, so they did move faster. Hard, too. Sure, hold and fought to well with the babe on her back strap. So the child grew hungry. But babe started up bawling too loud. Sure couldn't stop to feed her. Couldn't stop to feed and cry her down. She let it cry. She didn't want to. She had no heart to tune to her. Keep that thing quiet, called the older fish. He pointed his finger at the babe. The woman sank low. The driver cracked his whip across the babe anyhow. The babe hollered like any hurt child, and the woman fell to the earth. The old man that was there, Toby, came and helped her to her feet. I must go soon, she told. He said. Sarah couldn't stand up straight any longer. She was too weak. The sun burned on her face. The babe cried and cried. Pity me, oh, pity me, so it sounded like. Sarah was so sad and starving, she sat down in the row. Get up, you black cow, called the overseer. He pointed his hand, and the driver's foot clawed around Sarah's legs. Her fat dress tore into rags. Her legs bled onto the earth. She couldn't get up. Toby was there, but there was no one to help her in the bay. Now, before it's too late, Tommy said. Now, Father. Yes, daughter, the time has come, Toby answered. Go, as you know how to go. He raised his arms, holding them out to her. Clean to the thunder. And more magic words. Said so quickly, she sounded like whispering sighs. The young woman lifted one foot on the air, then the other. It flew clumsily at first, but the child now held tightly in her arms. Then she felt the magic, the African mystery. So she rose just as free as a bird, as light as a feather. The overseer rode after her howling. Sarah flew over the fences. She flew over the woods. Tall trees could not snag her, nor could the overseer. She flew like an eagle now until she was gone from sight. No one dared speak about it. Couldn't believe it. But it was, because they that was there saw that it was. So the next day was good hot in the field. A young man's sleigh fell from the heat. The driver came and hipped him. Toby came over and spoke words to the fallen one. The words that ancient Africa once heard, I never remembered completely. The young man forgot them as soon as he heard them. They went way inside him. He got up and rolled over on the air. He rolled it around, and he flew away. Another and another fell from the heat. Toby was there. He cried out to the fowler and reached his arms out to them. Queen come to life. Queen come to life. Whispers and sighs. And they too rose on the air. They rode the hot breezes. The ones flying the black and shiny sticks. Wheeling above the head of the overseer. They crossed the roads, the fields, the fences, the streams, and were away. Seize the old man, cried the overseer. I heard him say the magic words. Seize him. The one calling himself master came running. The driver got his whip ready to curl around old Toby and tie him up. The slave owner took his whip gun from its place. He meant to kill old black Toby. But Toby just laughed. So he threw back his head and said, don't you know who I am? Don't you know some of us? In the field, he said it to their faces. We are the ones who fly. And he sighed the ancient words that were God's promise. He said them all around to the others in the field under the whip. They were thunder. There was a great outcry. The bent back straightened up. Old and young who were called slaves and could fly joined hands. So like they would ring sing. But they didn't suffer on the surface. They didn't sing. They rose on the earth. They flew in a flock that was black against the heavenly blue. Black crows and black shadows, it didn't matter. They went so high, way above the plantation, way over the slave land, so they flew away to freedom. And the old man, old Toby, flew behind him, taking care of him. He wasn't crying. He wasn't lost. He was deceived. His gaze fell on the plantation where the slaves who could not cry waited. Take this with you. They looked spoke it, but they were so decided. Toby couldn't take them with him. Hadn't the time to teach them to fly. They must wait for a chance to run. Goodbye, the old man called Toby spoke to them, to his soul, and he was flying down. So they say, the overseer told it. The one called Master said it was a lie, took it to life. The driver kept his mouth shut. The slaves who could not fly told about the people who could fly to their children when they were free. When they sat close before the fire in the free land, they told us. They did so love firelight and freedom and time. They say that the children of the ones who could not fly told their children. And now, me, I have told it to you. You've been listening to stories from the book The People Could Fly, American Black Folk Tales, told by Virginia Hamilton and published by Alfred Knopf. Northern Storyteller is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Our program is coordinated by Ron Inouye. Our engineer is Robert Gilfillan. The executive producer is Paula Tonella. And I'm Marilyn Flowers. And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Hi, I'm Nikki Eisman. Today I'll be reading Caleb and Kate by William Steed. Caleb the carpenter and Kate the weaver loved each other, but not every single minute. Once in a while, they'd differ about this or that, and wind up in such a fierce quarrel you'd never believe they were husband and wife. During one of those crazy quarrels, Caleb got so angry he slammed out of the house, hurting his wife from top to bottom, and she, for her part, screamed after him the most odious insults that came to her mouth. Caleb went crashing into the forest by their house, pondering why he had married such a cantankerous hottie-dotty. But after he'd walked a while, his fury faded, and he couldn't remember what it was they had quarreled about. He could only remember that he loved her. He could only remember her dimples and her sweet ways, and what fragrant noodle pudding she made. Instead of going straight back to put his arms around her and kiss her warm neck, he decided, since he was already there, to look in the forest for oak trees he could cut down later and take to the mill. He wandered farther into the woods, grew leg-weary, and lying down to rest for just a moment, was overcome with all the greenness and slipped into a green sleep. Before long, the witch, Yabida, who lived in a hidden cave in that forest, came shuffling by in her slippers, saying secret spells to herself. She stopped short where Caleb was lying, snoring away like a beehive. "How timely," she snickered. "Here's my chance to test that new spell Cousin Adrazzle just taught me." Squatting down, he touched his skinny thumb to the tip of Caleb's left forefinger, and, careful not to wake him, barely wheezed these words. "Ammy, whammy, ibbin, banny,
house is now a bow wow wow.
And there at her feet, instead of a snoring carpenter, was a snoozing dog.
What a darling spell, she cried. I'm pleased to have work today's worth of mischief. The witch departed, swollen with pride.
It was sundown when Caleb woke. First he yawned, then he stretched, then he reached to scratch in his armpit with his leg. Holy gazelle! His eyes bulged and his big mouth hung open and slavered. Where he should have seen a belt and breeches and a pair of heavy brogans, he beheld the belly and hairy legs of a dog. He was on his feet in an instant, all four of them. Terrified, he spun around to see what he could see of himself. He couldn't believe what he saw. Of course not, such things don't happen. Oh no, this is clearly me, he realized. I'm not dreaming. I'm a dog. Now what, he wondered. Well, all I can do is go back and explain what happened. And he began trotting homeward, stunned by his new condition, his tail swinging from side to side. Whatever in the world of wonders was it all about? He was suddenly a dog. True, but he was also Caleb the carpenter. He had Caleb's thoughts, and he was running home to his wife, Kate, wasn't he? Yes, on four legs and sick at heart. Night fell, and there was a simple moon. Kate at home was stumbling from room to room, bumping into furniture, dizzy with dread. She had been at every window again and again, peering out, and had been outside many times, but had seen no part of Caleb. Had her husband deserted her, she asked herself. No, he loved her. He had said so often. But maybe he was fed up with her, or maybe something had happened to him, a catastrophe. Caleb was outside the door just then, reluctant to come in and show himself. He was ashamed of being a dog. But at last, he worked up the courage to scratch. When Kate held the door open, he saw her pale, worried face. He scrambled over the sill, thrust his hairy paws up on her apron, and strove to say, "Katie, it's me!" Only a suffering growl escaped his throat. He tried again and again. He could imagine himself saying Kate, but couldn't say it. "Poor lost animal," she cried. She gave him some water in a bowl on the floor and a piece of leftover ham. Caleb drank avidly, but he had no heart to eat. When Kate put a shawl on his shoulders and started to leave, he knew she was going out to look for him and tried to stop her. He held her shoe in his teeth. "Stand aside, silly dog," he scolded. "This is no time for games. I must find my dear husband. He may be in terrible trouble." Caleb let her go and trotted gravely after. All night they traipsed through the moon-laced forest. There was no finding Caleb because there he was behind his wife, with the shape and the shadow of a dog. At home again in the cool morning, her shoes wet with dew, weary Kate fell asleep in a chair Caleb had made for her, and the maker slept at her feet. When they woke at noon, Kate searched again in the forest, with the woe-begone Caleb dodging her heels, sniffing the ground for no good reason except that he felt he had to. Then she went into town and made inquiries there, in the tavern, at the post office, in the shops on the green. Everyone was deeply concerned and would keep an eye out, but no one had caught even a glimpse of Caleb, coming, going, or standing still. When Kate went to bed that night, Caleb got into his rightful place beside her, snuggled against her dear body, kissed her sweet neck as he'd always done, and sighed out his sorrow. He welcomed the dog's warmth. With him there, he felt less bereft. She fell asleep with her arm around him, but he was awake all night, wide-eyed, wondering. How could he manage to make himself known to his wife? If he could only tell her somehow that the dog in her arms was her husband, if he could only return to his natural state, or if Kate could perhaps become a dog, then they could be dogs together. Kate decided to keep Caleb. She bought him a collar studded with brass, and she named him Rufus because his fur was reddish like her husband's hair. She taught him tricks, to stand on two legs, to sit, to shake hands, to fetch things she asked for, to count by barking, to bow. She could hardly believe how fast he learned. Whenever their friends came calling, Kate would show off her dog. She enjoyed these gatherings, the human conversations, but he didn't like to have his head patted by his old cronies. Kate grew to love her dog very much indeed, but though they gave each other comfort, they were far from happy. Kate longed for her missing husband. She couldn't understand why he'd left her, and how Caleb wished he could speak and explain,
She would sprawl by her feet, gnawing a bone while she worked at her weaving. Often a tear would hang from her lashes, as she would stare through the window and sigh, and Caleb would put his paws in her lap and lick her sad face. Kate would sat fondly behind his ears, caress his fur, and tell him how lucky she was to have such a faithful friend. One afternoon in late summer, when Caleb was stretched under a tree, reveling in the green smell of the grass, some other dogs turned up and enticed him into a romp. Caleb loved it, but soon quit and retired into the house where the others dared not follow. He had discovered that being a dog among dogs could be very sport, but he didn't want to forget who he was. The dogs came by a few times more, but Caleb gave them no encouragement, and they stopped coming. Months passed in their proper order. From time to time, Caleb was drawn back to the place where he'd turned into a dog. He hoped he might find in that luckless spot some clue to the secret of his transformation. He would lie down where he had fallen asleep that day, pretend to be sleeping again, and watch intently through slitted eyes. Chipmunks scurried around in sudden dust. Birds were busy in the branches, leaves bent for the roving breezes, a legion of insects hummed, grasshoppers on occasion catapulted through the air. Caleb saw nothing extraordinary. He tried chewing various plants on the wild chance that one of them might change him back to a man. No such thing even began to happen. Winter came, snow fell. It was 8 months since Caleb had become a dog. He kept warm near the glowing fire, dozing much of the day. He watched Kate move through the house, hopeless now about ever being able to reveal his true self. And what if she did learn who he was? Would it make her happier? Well, she would know that he hadn't deserted her. But would she relish having a dog for a husband? She decided she wouldn't. One crisp, starry night, long after Christmas, burglars crept up to the warm, sleeping house. They deftly pried open a window and stole into the parlor with a drift of icy air. But Caleb was instantly up and barking. He scurried through the bedroom door straight at the intruders. "Fly, the stupid mongrel!" cried the shorter burglar, trying to fend him off. Caleb locked his jaws on the man's arm. The taller burglar seized Caleb by the collar, but Caleb held fast. Kate, torn from her dreams by the hubbub, saw her brave dog fighting two men and ran to help. She pummeled the one who had hold of Caleb and pulled his coarse hair. He reeled and flung her to the floor, hissing broken curses through his beard. That very instant, Caleb rushed him, hoarsely snarling and showing his dangerous fangs. The terrified chief drew a knife from a pocket in his rags and slashed crazily at Caleb, slicing a bit of skin off a toe on his front paw. A miracle! Caleb didn't yelp with pain. He yelled the word out, and holding his injured paw to his mouth, he was astonished to find it a bleeding hand. The thief had cut the toe that had been the finger through which the witch Yehuda had worked her spell, and the spell was undone. Caleb was Caleb again, clad in his old clothes. "It's me!" he shouted exultantly. Kate gaped, and "Caleb!" she shrieked. The thieves, frightened to the point of insanity, dived through the window and vanished. They ran so fast they left no footprints in the snow. Caleb and Kate leapt into each other's arms and pleased together for a long time. Much later, when they were able to talk intelligently, Caleb told her, or tried to tell her, what had happened so far as he knew. What had actually happened, they never found out. Like many another thing, it remained a mystery. You've been listening to Caleb and Kate by William Steig, published by Farrar Straus Rue. Northern Storyteller is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Our program is coordinated by Ron Inouye. Our engineer is Robert Gilfillan. The executive producer is Carla Tonella, and I'm Mickey Eisman.
Hi, now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. I'm Robert Gilfillan. Today I'll be reading from the book Tales of Wonder by Jane Yolen. The Boy Who Sang for Death. In a village that lay like a smudge on the cheek of a quiet valley, there lived an old woman and the last of her seven sons. The older six had joined the army as they came of age, and her husband was long in his grave. The only one left at home was a lad named Tyler. Even if he had not been her last, his mother would have loved him best, for he had a sweet disposition and a sweeter voice. It was because of that voice, pure and clear, the curled like spring birds, that she called him Tyler. But his father and brothers, fearing the song name would unman him, had it changed to Carl. So Carl he had remained. Carl was a sturdy boy, a farm boy in face and hands, but his voice set him apart from the rest. Untutored and untrained, Carl's voice could call home sheep from the pasture, birds from the trees. In the village, it was even said that the sound of Carl's voice made graybeards dance in the lane to walk and milk to spring from a maiden's breast. Yet Carl used his voice for no such magic, but to please his mother and to gentle his flock. One day when Carl was out singing to the sheep and goats to bring them safely home, his voice broke like a piece of cloth caught on a nail it tore. Feeling something wrong at home, he hurried the beast. They scattered before him, and he came to the house to find that his mother had died. Between one breath and the next, it was gone, said the priest. Gently Carl folded her hands on her breast, and although she was beyond the sound of a song, he whispered something in her ear and turned to leave. Where are you going? Called out the priest, his words heavy with concern. I'm going to find death and bring my mother back, cried Carl, his jagged voice now dulled with grief. He turned at the door and faced the priest who knelt by his mother's bed. Surely death will accept an exchange. What is one old, tired woman to death who has known so many? And will you recognize death, my son, when you meet him? That I do not know, said Carl. The priest nodded and rose heavily from his knees. Then listen well, my son. Death is an aging but still handsome prince. His eyes are dark and empty. He will see much suffering in the world. If he finds such a one, he is death. I will know him, said Carl. And what can you give death in exchange that he has not already had many times over? Asked the priest.